Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It's the IT Babble podcast. I'm Patrick, and I'm joined, as always, with my good friend, Tony. Tony, how has your distance learning and how has your spring been going?
Everything's been going pretty well. We've relocated and we're now kind of permanently based in Mississippi. And I never thought I would live in Mississippi, but it's actually been really good. And I would say people here are fairly laid back and logical and kind of adjusting, I would say, better than most of the United States in the way they're handling stuff. So that's been good. And, you know, with the kind of work that I do, working remotely has been, it's been busy, but it's been flexible. So I can't really complain.
That's good. That is good. Yeah, I'm looking at Mississippi. You guys don't have a lot of coronavirus cases compared to a lot of other states. It's actually, you guys are kind of fairly low compared to...
Yeah, and, you know, like, there's a lot of ordinances and stuff, but I can just attest to the fact that people are... They're just using common sense, but they're not... People in Mississippi aren't locking themselves in their houses. They're going out, they're exercising. Even when most of the stores were closed, all the big kind of recreational walking paths were still open. And people were out getting exercise and sun, and I think, you know, that's probably helped a lot. And so now, you know, things are opening up. But again, I think people have just been smart, and you can see people helping each other out and just taking normal precautions and not. I haven't seen anybody overreacting or yelling at anybody. I even went into a store and I didn't know that they had a mask rule and I'd forgotten my mask. I do have a mask because I used to live in China. So I have a couple masks that would scare people if they saw them.
Yeah. Okay.
I told my friend I have a mask that could withstand a direct sneeze on a Chinese subway. And they don't really know what that means, but you can't even easily buy this. Like, you can't easily buy this anywhere in America. I remember ordering these through my doctor when I was in Shanghai. Anyway, I walked into a store and I was like, oh, guys, like, I'm so sorry. I don't have a mask. I want to buy a washer and dryer. And they were like, don't worry about it. Like, it's totally fine. We have masks. Just like, you know, we're not going to shake hands. We're going to stay a few feet apart and we'll do the deal that way. Totally fine. Nobody yelling at you. Nobody judging you. Just, mm-hmm. you know, people that don't have, there are just, you know, the whole mask thing, you can go back and forth with it. I remember back in December, I was having arguments with people and telling them to wear masks. These, not in America, but in Asia. I'm like, look, I don't care if it's coronavirus or the flu or whatever. If you're in a dense Asian city, like if you're in Seoul, Tokyo, Shanghai, Manila, Bangkok, and there is anything going around, like a dangerous flu, some kind of virus, whatever, you wear a mask. You always wear a mask in Asia. So someone was like, yeah, but they said that it wouldn't always protect you. And I'm like, yeah, but it will sometimes protect you. Isn't sometimes better than zero?
Yeah.
And then this guy I used to work with, he like, this was kind of the last social media conversation I was in. There was a point really early on, like before January, I think, where I really just got out of social media because I saw where it was going. And it's gotten worse. But anyway, the other reason I left is I knew that I would never, ever be able to beat this comment in any social media. And it was over. Like, it was like, okay, this is it. There's no more. Nothing can ever beat this. This guy, I was like, I'm like, I'm not sure where you got this information, but it is incorrect. You can look on. I'm like, I'm American. I know you won't trust me, So you can look on the British, you can look like on the National Institute, what is it? The National Health Service, the NHS.
Yeah, NHS.
You can look there. You can look at the U.S. Consulate postings for China, like about Americans living there. You don't have to trust me. And I'm sorry. And my friend replied back. She probably got the information from her yoga instructor while doing Pilates outside.
Gosh.
And I was like, oh man, that's pretty mean. And then I just, you know, that was it. I was off social media except for circulating some stats occasionally.
Yeah. I can confirm, like, all the walking paths here in Indianapolis are open, and most of them. And people are being very responsible out there. My wife works at Target, and she says, you know, some people come in with masks, some people don't. And nobody is like confronting other people. They're just, they're like, okay, well that's that person's choice, either or against. And she says things are starting to get back to normal. Like the truck shipments are coming in on a regular basis, like they're supposed to. And things are starting slowly coming back to normal. There are still things that people are still like trying to hoard toilet paper a little bit. Still trying to hoard like disinfectants and cleaners and Clorox wipes and things like that. But overall, you know, people are doing okay and are being responsible. And, you know, I was outside this afternoon for a walk, and, you know, when people were passing each other on the path, you know, they were giving themselves a little bit more, you know, space in between. It wasn't like shoulder to shoulder. So it was fine. You know, people are being generally okay and about this whole thing. So it's good. And you don't see a lot of people on the walking paths with masks on because they're exercising typically. So, you know, the mask is not. So that's not something you see. So people are just being good. You know, you don't see people like shaking hands or holding hands or hugging out in public or anything like that. So, you know, people are good. But at the same time, I think people are really ready for some things to open up a little bit. We can talk more about this. We can talk all show about this, but I'd rather not. I'd rather talk about something far more important, Tony. Way more important.
Like my new phone?
Your new phone. That's exactly what I want. I don't even know what it is. You just told me you got a new phone. I have...
So people, here's my rule. And I even had my job say that they would buy me... they would get me a new iPhone. Here's my rule. If it's more than $300... I will not purchase it if it's a phone.
But the iPhone SE is pretty close. It's $400. It's pretty close.
It has to be under $300, right. And I pay for it outright. There's no plans. I will not put the phone on a plan.
No, that's a bad for people out there who. And I understand some people need to do it because they need to finance it because they don't have They don't have $1,000 or even $800 to put towards a new device. But if you can. Just pay for it outright. Just do it. It'll save you money, and it'll be yours. You can then turn around and sell it, and get it or trade it in.
When I say no plan, I pay as you go, man. I won't even do like a contract.
Yeah, I'm so, pretty close to that. So
we're a Google Fee family now, or Google Fi. Bought a Motorola G Stylus.
Oh, you got them. Yep. That thing. I wondered about that thing. Okay, all right.
Here was the selling point. The only feature I cared about, I don't have to charge it for up to 48 hours. And that so far has been true.
Nice. Nice.
So I use my phone a lot, especially like I take video conferencing calls all the time on my phone and they destroy my battery. So I was like, man, I don't even have that many apps. Like I have So, you know, a few things I rotate in and out, but, and I do that too. Like if I'm in the mood to play a video game that I own on the App Store, I install it, play it. And when I'm done, I remove it. I don't keep it on my phone. So, my phone's pretty boring, but I was getting all these Microsoft Teams calls and Zoom calls and Hangouts and Meets. I'm like, my phone is just like my Samsung it was just dying. Like I'd make it like 25% of the day.
Oh yeah.
So, and I was doing a lot of my calls in my car because my baby was like napping and I didn't want to wake him up. So I was doing calls in the car and I could charge the phone in the car, but like it doesn't really charge that fast when you're using it. And anyway, I was having all these issues, so
and
I upgraded.
That phone cost according to today, $249.
That is correct, $249.
And for people out there who are wondering about Google Fi, there's not a lot of phones can use Google Fi, but not a lot of phones can use the full power of Google Fi. Like I have a OnePlus phone and I am on Google Fi, but I don't have Google Fi like you have Google Fi, Tony. My Google Fi is limited to T-Mobile, but your Google Fi,
it can roam around and do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it'll switch carriers to U.S. Cellular, whichever is strongest, giving you far more coverage than any one carrier can really probably offer.
And it works in a bunch of countries without having to pay for any additional services.
That's right. And the most you would ever pay per month, did you have the $70 plan, or are you going like the flexible one?
I think we have two phones on it. I think the most that we would pay is 70. So for two phones, I think it's like 80 or something. I have to check, but it's good. It's a really good deal. And you don't even pay that much. Like if you have a down month where you're not using a lot of data, you don't pay that much.
Yeah. And on top of that, if you want to cancel, you literally just take out the SIM card, break it, throw it away.
And the phone is unlocked. So you just use it with another carrier.
Yeah, and you can go into Google Fi and you can just cancel your plan. And that's it. It's done. It's over. There's no contract fee that you have to pay or anything. It's over. It's just done.
Yeah.
So,
it's the phone for me.
You know, and I think when I look at $1,100 phone, I'm like, why do I need that? I have like a handful of like 10 to 15 apps that I use. And that's it. And texting and phone calls. And that's it.
Yeah, but Patrick, you're not Insta-famous.
This is true. I'm not Insta-famous, nor will I ever be Insta-famous. So
Patrick, you have a desk project? Were you cleaning your desk like Omar, or did you make a desk?
Omar, now, this is some fake news, sir. I'm just going to call you out on it. Omar never cleaned his desk.
He never cleaned it?
No, not really. He would just move. He would organize stuff on it, and then it would look clean. But he never really cleaned it, or he would just hide the mugs, the dirty coffee mugs. Anyway, Omar's doing well. I think we're going to get together on Zoom sometime soon. So what I have is I have a fairly small desk, and using an Allen wrench, I could adjust it and make it a standing desk. So when I was teaching, this was kind of like a podium, kind of a workspace that I made myself for the front of the room. And it has wheels on it, and I can move it to anywhere in my classroom I wanted. And so when we moved to Indianapolis, I lowered it down and made it kind of a desk. But it's small, and so my wife has a computer, but she has no place really to put it. And so it sits on the floor, which is, when you have kids running around, this is not a good plan. And so what I'm going to do is, Tony, I'm going to go to IKEA, and I'm going to buy a countertop.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to buy a countertop. Now, and it's going to be 98 inches long, and that is, oh my gosh, how much is that in centimeters? That is almost 250 centimeters, so it's long, but this will house our printer, both our computers, and we are going to share an external monitor using an HDMI switch where we can just switch between the different inputs, her computer and my computer. But we're going to have space. We're going to have space for, because she has paperwork and stuff that she needs to do. Not for Target, but just in general, you know, for the kids or whatever. I have paperwork sometimes, but right now I have piles of paper around the desk that I kind of know what's in there, but I don't know really what's in there. it just drives me a little nuts. I just want to clean it up and, It's going to be much. It's almost three times the length of what I currently have. But we'll have places for her computer, for my computer. I'll have place for my Zoom audio recorder, which I love, and it's expensive, and I'd want to keep it off the floor. I think it'll just help us organize, and you buy a countertop, and then at IKEA, they have these desks that you can put underneath it. Not these desks, but shelves. So it keeps it at desk height. Desk height. That's it. Not height. And yeah, so I'm going to kind of construct my own my own desk out of IKEA parts. So
good luck, man.
Yeah, I mean IKEA, I could order it, but I want to go to IKEA to kind of take a look.
You want to get a feel. You want to get a feel for it.
I do want to get a feel for it. And so, I've got cable management kind of planned out. I've got the monitor switching all planned out, so we can, you know. And I've got speakers all planned out because I've just purchased the monitor from Dell. It was on sale. It's just a $200 monitor. It's nothing fancy. Has a, you know, you want to watch Netflix on it, that's fine. You want to look at a Google Doc, this is great. I don't need a $5,000 monitor or even a $700 monitor for that case. So I got a $200 monitor that we both can use, and it has audio out, so we can put speakers into it. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good setup for us. It's going to be good. I'm excited. But so it'll be July. That's when IKEA opens back up here after the July 4th holiday. So,
you know, IKEA's kind of disappointing. How come they can't literally just mail stuff all over the United States? I don't know if you've tried to do this, but I've tried a few times to order stuff, and they like say they can't deliver it, and I don't know why.
I have no idea. I haven't even tried. Just because it's such a big piece. It's 98. You know, it's like 50 pounds. I don't know if they would deliver something that big. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not sure.
It's weird.
It is weird.
It's weird. I wasn't trying to order something that big. So,
and of course we have sad news. Yesterday, Fred Willard, the improv comedian, passed away. He was just just really funny and just a generally good guy. And he never cursed. That was kind of, his thing. He never, ever cursed. None of his characters cursed. It was only his golly gee but he was just a brilliant, really funny guy and good stuff.
Yeah, he's good. If you don't know who he is, he's in Best in Show.
Yeah.
About the like whatever the dog contest, and then he's in Anchorman, and he's in a lot of stuff. Spinal Tap.
Yeah. He's in the new Netflix show Space Force coming up. He's actually in that one. I think that was his last role. But yeah, he's just just a great guy, really good performer, and very quick-witted and very, very funny. So it's just sad. I really kind of liked him. So anyway, I guess that's enough. We can actually talk about education stuff now, Tony, if you want. We have.
Yeah, we might as well.
All right, Tony, I'm going to drop a bombshell. Learning management systems are not distance learning systems. They're just not. They're not Edmodo, Schoology, Haiku,
what?
Patrick, Canvas. What? These things are not distance learning systems, Tony.
They're all the same, Patrick. It's no. Everything. Everything is one.
I'm telling you, they're not. They're just not meant for it, and they're not because they're organized in a linear fashion, and that's it. You can't just quickly find, you know, like units and videos about units or assignments about, you know, it's not organized like Blackboard, for example, or WebCT, which Blackboard bought years ago. Those are made for distance learning where you'll never be in a classroom. And so they've been organized in a different way. These are meant to be a companion to meeting a teacher or a professor on a regular basis throughout a week or every other week or sometime that they will actually be in there.
Here, let me tell you the best thing that happened to me. So we were in like, I don't know, day four of like online learning. And this teacher messages me and she's like, we got to get an online assessment system up immediately. And I was like, no, we don't. That's not going to happen for so many reasons. And I'm working on a way to make the platform better, and it's going to include assessments, but blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I'm not going to mention the name of the school, but it was like, it's like one of the best schools in Texas. Mm-hmm. She's like, this is what that school uses, and that's what we need. And I was like, okay, can you just give me 1 hour to look into this? So she'd already reached out, of course, like, to the company, and she just, like, you know, teachers should not, if you don't have experience, I don't want to say teachers, if you don't have experience dealing with salespeople, you should not contact them, because they don't tell you anything wrong with their products. So I went to this company's website, and I pulled up a bunch of their FAQs, and it was very well written, and it said, this product is designed to be used with teacher supervision in the classroom.
There you go.
Because I was explaining to her, she was like, I'm like, you can't, this is what's been coming up. I'm like, you can't keep the students from cheating at home.
Yeah.
You can't.
There's no way.
And you're going to have to replan the way you do assessments. There's no way to keep them from cheating. And just because I knew we were podcasting, I had a student send me a review of his AP computer science exam, which was done fully online this year. To put this in perspective, an IB computer science exam takes two tests over 2 days, and it's about 5 to 6 hours long. And this kid did his AP computer science exam this year, and it was only 45 minutes. So I don't even know how they're going to compare these exams to, like, exams in the past and equate them. But anyway, yeah. He said basically the way that they did it is they just made the test really fast. So it was just you didn't have any time. And then he said they were monitoring social media, allegedly, for people posting answers.
Whatever.
But he said they weren't monitoring audio and video systems. And so somebody – you could take all – if you wanted to, you could have gotten all the kids together in the class, put them together with the teacher in a room, and they could have all just done the test together. And yeah. there'd be no way to stop it.
Now,
so I was explaining to her, you can't stop cheating at home, and that's not what the assessment system, like, I'm like, you can deter it, we can get a lockdown browser, there can be some stuff, but you can't control it.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, can we just look at all their faces while they're taking the test through their cameras? You know, and yeah. this goes to your point, none of these systems that schools have that feature. Now, if you've ever looked at the Google admin exam for Google Suite administration certification, you have to schedule it with Google, and they actually monitor you. Maybe not a person, but they have a software that accesses your camera and monitors your face and your body while you're taking the test to keep you kind of in check, to see if you're acting like you're cheating. And that's a specialized system, but it's purposefully designed for people who are administering assessments that are never, ever going to see the student. They're never going to meet them.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, none of these systems have any of those features.
There is a company out there called Examity, Examity, Examity.com. And this thing is creepy as can be, man. So what it is it's an online exam. This is definitely geared for universities, not for high schools, certainly not for middle school. But what it is, you have a computer, and it's a secure browser, and there is a proctor, and you can see that person's face, and they're like, hello, how are you? Hi, can you pick up the computer and move it around the room? I have to make sure you're in a room, there's nobody there. And you do that, and then, you know, they don't chit chat with you, but you constantly see their face. They constantly, and they're like, show me your bag. Where is your bag? Okay, your bag has to be over here. Okay, if somebody comes in the room, I'm going to stop the exam. And the exam is all done on a computer, right? So they're not actually writing anything. They're typing or maybe doing multiple choice, and they're watching everything that gets typed. And they have on YouTube, you can find demo videos of it. And it's just, it's creepy because you have this person that's just constantly staring at you the whole exam. It's like a teacher, like just like staring at you. And of course, they're not the teacher. They're just somebody who's hired, who's there. And if somebody comes in or they're going to say, who is that person? Have they left the room? Do they leave anything? Show me the room again. If they left something, if they keep coming in again, I'm going to have to fail you on this exam. I mean, it's, and I have, and they I'm sure they are very expensive, because
yeah, I'm sure they are very expensive.
Yeah,
Yeah. But you're right. I think that this will go into some other points in number three. Like, you got to have a completely different view. Like, I just helped get a Canvas in implementation going, and I integrated Microsoft Teams into it. And everyone was like, wait a second, doesn't Teams have like an assignment classroom area? I'm like, yeah, but you know, it's not that good. And it's really buggy, and like randomly just stuff stops working. And I'm like, and Canvas has a really good assignment system,
yeah,
and a good quiz system. But guess what it doesn't have? It doesn't really have video conferencing. Yeah. So when we plug in Teams for free into Canvas, now you get all that stuff together, but you got to put the products together.
Yeah.
They're not out of the box. Neither one of them does the job.
No. And I mean, we're middle school, so we're not as, I don't think we have as higher expectation. Like, we don't have final exams, for example. We don't have, you know, these grades that these kids have in our middle school. They're important to the parents and to the child and to the teachers and everything. But, you know, universities aren't going to be looking at their seventh grade Spanish grade and say, oh, well, you got a C plus. What happened? I'm afraid we can't let you into our university. They're not going to do that. So, yeah, I wish we had a better, I wish our learning management system had a way to integrate, say, Zoom in there. I think it's coming. It's just not there yet. It's just not there yet. And I wish we had a better, they do have an online quiz, but it's not very good. And so people are going elsewhere and they're doing their quizzes like on Edulastic, or they're doing it through Google Forms, because you can make those into quizzes.
Yeah.
So they're just being,
you know, I was thinking the other day that the biggest mistake here probably is that if you're using like an old school model where you actually did your own kind of work as a teacher, meaning you had a website that you maintained for your class and you have links on there, I've got a feeling that this whole process would be easier. If you were posting your assignments and just core information on your website with all the resources and stuff, and your assessments were like project-based, which is what we used to do all the time. It's just been kind of recent. Everyone's been really obsessed with this, like, oh, now we can do all these like smart quizzes online. So we used to be following this plan, like 2002 to, I don't know, maybe 2010, 2011. It was all like projects, do projects, build a portfolio, develop it, have the kids maintain a website if they can,
yeah,
especially middle school all the way up, have them build and show and demonstrate and comment. And if you were doing that all the time, this wouldn't actually matter. And then if you use Zoom, all you'd have to do is post a Zoom link in your blog every day to facilitate the phone call,
mm-hmm,
or the conference call to answer questions. And I just think that that's probably an overall better model, is the portfolio model. Because this obsession with these summative quizzes, I'm like, yeah, they're good. I mean, I guess they're good for quizzing yourself if you're going to practice for an assessment that's quiz-based. Like, you know, if you're doing an AP exam that is mostly quiz-based, but then again, you can buy all those quizzes and prep material. It seems like a lot of these systems, that's kind of their focus is, you know, oh, you can make a slideshow for your kids, or oh, you can like randomize questions. It's like, yeah, but they can just look up the answers.
Yeah, on their
phone. Like, oh, we'll use a lockdown browser. They're just going to use their phone.
They're just going to use their phone. Or like, yeah, or they're going to be
that's the thing.
And they're going to be texting their friends on their phone anyway. Hey, I'm on question four. Oh, it's a random question. You have a different question four. Okay, well, here's my question four. And they're going to take a picture and send it through iMessage or whatever SMS they have, and they're going to, you know, it'll be a group chat, and everybody will, oh, the answer is that. And here, you know,
I'm really thinking about going into this next school year and just saying, hey, you know, there's no reason that we can't use like more of a website model for every class above a certain grade level. I wouldn't do this for elementary, but every Well, maybe grade five enough. I think grade five kids could do it. But every class needs to have like a WordPress site or something, and they need to learn how to use it. They need to learn how to put content in it, because that's really the most cost-effective way to kind of build your curriculum and all of your resources. And then if you want to use that stuff in another service, it's available.
Yeah. Yeah. And when WordPress, I think that's a key right there. A lot of people think WordPress is just a website, but it's actually a content management site.
Yeah.
And if you're using the more powerful, if you're not just using WordPress.com, if you're using, if you're hosting your own WordPress, for example, you can have a lot more power over it. So you can actually post something on one place and it actually shows up on two different pages because you can tag it differently. Like Moodle or Drupal or Joomla. I think WordPress, you can do that as well. So yeah. I don't know. That would be a tough sell for my teachers. If it was high school, I can see high school teachers liking it because they have a lot of control. But what about Moodle site? What about setting up a Moodle site and giving them...
You know, the problem with Moodle, like I looked at it again a few weeks ago. I haven't used it in a while. It still has the same problem. The resources required to have a Moodle site with like even 400 or 500 students, the resources for the hosting are way too high. Oh. Like Moodle's got a lot of tools, but it's not an efficient system. It uses a ton of memory. And you need a pretty beefy hosting environment. And I wouldn't know, you can't host it on campus now. It's all got to be cloud-based or at least off campus in a private server. I mean, that starts to get really expensive.
Yeah.
But Patrick, what if they did all their curriculum mapping through WordPress? What if I figured that out and they didn't need the curriculum map anywhere else?
That's a great idea. That is a really good idea. Actually have a curriculum mapping website that we use, but it doesn't get used. It's not as often as it should be, but that's all right. We'll get there. But go ahead, talk about it. Tell me about curriculum mapping in WordPress.
Oh, I haven't figured it out yet.
Oh, okay. But that sounds good, though. It sounds good. I mean, gosh, if you could figure that would be great. And that way, you know, you could point parents and students and like, here's what we're doing.
I've always thought that it would be feasible using categories and tags.
Yes. Yes.
And the thing is, I just need to set those up at the top level. So instead of letting people make categories, I would have to dictate those categories out. But I have figured out on my own like WordPress site how to cheaply do podcasting without spending any money on a podcasting service. So all the, when I do podcasts for my like expat blog, that's all now pure like WordPress and plugins using my hosting company. So I'm not using any services. So if you think about it, if there are teachers out there who just want to like record lessons and stuff, using that concept might also be good, where the kids can subscribe to a feed in iTunes, or not iTunes, instead Apple Music or whatever they use. They could subscribe to a class feed and get all the lessons. So
man, I like that idea of using a curriculum map in the fall if we are still distance learning. I love that idea.
Yeah, and I think WordPress can do it. I just need to sit down and go through it, look at all the plugins. It'd have to be a WordPress multi-user setup, so that's going to be a little bit more work. But I think probably for, I don't know, $200 a month, all the hosting would be solved.
Yeah, yeah. And WordPress is not going anywhere. It is a juggernaut.
It is, and there's hundreds of thousands of developers making stuff for it every day.
I think maybe 15 to 20% of all new websites every year are WordPress sites. Oh, hold on here. I got to close my window. The air conditioning, it kicked on. All right. So that's a great idea. I think I'm going to take that. I want to talk to my principals about that, about using our curriculum mapping. That would be fantastic, because we could be like, hey, we can skip over your Azure and G Suite. We can in that one, we can do that one last, and we can start in with distance learning in the fall.
We can skip over my Azure and G Suite. Like, just check it out. It's on IT Babble. It's on YouTube. It just shows you how to, if you have Office 365 for education and you have your Azure license, mm-hmm. it just shows you how to use Azure to build your G Suite automatically.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
So like when you make users in Azure, it automatically pushes them into G Suite. So it saves you a step.
Oh,
and it's like a tutorial. It's like a tutorial. So just like if you're using Office 365 Azure and G Suite together, it's the best free way I found to make this work. So the free Azure for Education supports 5 to 10 free SSO integrations.
Yep.
So it's free, whereas other services I've used are better, but they're expensive. This is free. So it just documents how to do it. So people should just check it out if you want to save some time, like set up your Azure. Kids sign into the Azure, like they sign in, they can sign into their laptops and stuff. They can use Azure to authenticate into everything, and then it automatically makes their accounts on the Google side, saves you a step.
That's great. That's awesome. That's very, yeah. very, very handy for people who are going to be running both. So,
yep.
That's good.
So that's it.
But, all right. So curriculum map as a roadmap. I love that. That's fantastic. That's something that's great, because ideally in a curriculum map, you should have the unit, and inside that unit planning, you should have maybe not each individual lesson, but you should have what, like maybe you have a lesson that covers 2 or 3 days. Like that lesson should
and
be
no
there.
One is no one has ever figured out how to even use a curriculum map yet.
yeah, that's
like,
right.
Since the first time I started using it was like 2005, and to date, I don't think I've met anyone who's actually figured out how to use it like in the present. They've only been able to use it like reflectively.
Yeah, reflectively. And what we use it for is continuity. So when we if a teacher moves on, like we had a teacher who he was teaching fourth grade, he got a job as a principal someplace. So we obviously lost him. New fourth grade teacher came in, and we're like, here are his curriculum maps. So you know, but you're right. People do it reflectively. People don't really. What they should be doing is, at the beginning of every unit, is look at their curriculum map, and we do have some teachers who do this, but most don't. And then at the end of the unit, should reflect about it and make changes. But here, over the summer, they can be going into the curriculum maps, saying, "Hey, we could be distance learning." Everything should be right there in that curriculum map, and then we could. I don't think we can publish the curriculum map, but we can actually make a PDF copy of it. Export as a PDF copy, and maybe if we can export it as HTML. I don't know. Anyway, and then we could share that out. Like, that could just be copy and pasted onto our learning management system. Like, hey, unit one, here it is. The whole thing. All the assignments are in there right now. Everything you need. So if you want to move asynchronously, you want to move faster or slower, here you go. But here's where you should be at the end of week one. Here's where you should be at the end of week two. I love this idea. This is great. This takes a lot of guesswork out of our teacher's hands. And if the teacher needs to slow it down, then teacher can slow it down. You know, if the curriculum can't move at a normal pace or as fast as they think, it's okay. You know, nobody's going to lose an arm over this. I like this idea, Tony. You've inspired me.
I'm going to keep working on it.
All right. Cool. Now
I mostly am just, I've always been obsessed with, you know, finding a way to map a curriculum without people using the word curriculum map. So maybe this is the way.
Maybe. So distance learning, we are kind of preparing for distance learning in the fall. Now we don't know if we're going to be doing it or not. We don't want to be caught flat footed. We don't want, the governor showing up in the August 1st and say all schools have to be distance learning until, I don't know, November 1st or something. So we are going to be coming up with a plan. Right, we haven't seriously. We're going to take the summer to do it. So my school hasn't really seriously, but I have. Both my brothers are both in education, different systems in Ohio, and here are the things that they are looking at. They're looking at a hybrid system. And you may have heard this already, Tony.
Yeah.
Hybrid system.
No, go ahead.
So on Mondays and Wednesdays, if your last name is the first half of the alphabet, you come in and you go to your class. In normal day, Monday, Wednesday, there. On Tuesday, Thursday, it's the second half of the alphabet. Come in and do your classes. And then on Friday, it's distance learning. Teachers are still coming into school to work, but there will be no students on campus. And so teachers are on school to facilitate any problems. They'll have their office hours at a certain time, like 10 to 2, with a lunch in there. And then they have time to prepare for the next week. So that's kind of that, or just completely distance learning. Or going to kind of like a block schedule kind of a thing where, you know, instead of having all your classes in one day, you'll have like math and English. And then you do a half day and then the other, you know, but those are some possibilities we've heard.
What I've proposed to my current school, and we're going to be talking about it again, and I don't think they'll listen to me because I'm just the CTO. not trying to say that to be negative, but this kind of stuff happens all the time. I do a lot of scheduling, though. And so when you're looking at this whole concept, scheduling is really important, and coming up with a way to run your school every day, regardless of emergencies, is the best way. So what I'm saying is you need to think about how you could run your school so that if there's an emergency, the impact is low because it just doesn't really matter. And you can just shift gears quickly. Like all you're really doing is saying, okay, if you have dance and theater, you're not doing that right now. You just have you have a hole in your schedule. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get the school to look at. So I've thrown out a couple of crazy things. So first insane idea, Patrick, are you ready?
Lay it on me.
All right. If you are over, if you're above grade 8, so grade 9 to 12, and this is important because when it comes to managing problems, you got to keep the scope of the problem as small as possible. That's the best thing you want to do. You want to mitigate. You don't just want to shut stuff down. You want to just mitigate the problem. So the more students who are free and can just work, where you don't have to give them a special plan at all, they just know what to do, the less work you have. That's just my logic, but I think it makes sense. So
yeah.
Grade 9 to 12. You don't have to come to school for all of your classes anymore. You can take a subset of your classes online, meaning it's the same teacher, it's the same content. You just don't come to school, and you can choose, like, you're doing your English 11 class remotely. You're still responsible for everything. You will have to show up to sit a formal exam. There'll have to be a backup process for exams. Like, there's no other way to do that.
Yeah.
But if you want to flex your schedule, if you want to be flexible, you can choose so many credits that you do online through the school. And I'm trying to get the school to agree to allow students to take some classes that aren't offered but could be elective credits through other third parties. The idea is that the total number of days a student would come to school would go from 5 to like 2 or 3.
Mm.
And the older the kids get, the fewer days they would come. And if they have sports, they come to school and they can practice and do stuff even if they don't have classes. So they get all this flexibility. And the teacher is basically doing the same amount of work, because if they're teaching a grade 10 English class, And I said subset, not all classes fit this model, but classes that do, why not offer it? They teach a grade 10 English class. That class gets recorded and all the content is online already all the time. They don't wait for a catastrophe and start using the internet.
Yeah.
It's just like, if you're within these, if you teach within these subjects, all of this is online and available so that students can choose to either be in person or at home for the class. And there's no requirement for them to do in like face-to-face lectures or anything. They can have office hours where you set office hours and they meet you. So they can't just demand your time. There has to be some management there. But they're just watching your lecture after you do it. They're doing the work on their own. They're participating in online forums. So as long as there's at least 10 kids doing this, I would say maybe even 7 for every class offered, as long as 7 students buy into it for English 10, you can run it online. And if nobody buys into it, you don't run it. That's fine. But the idea is that if you're teaching within those classes, it doesn't matter if anyone is signed up or not. Every single lesson is stocked and recorded. You're done. You just build this library.
Yeah.
And you build this flexibility in for the older kids. So if something bad happens, all their extracurriculars are basically dead. They're not playing sports anymore. They're not doing theater. They're just down to their core so they can graduate. So you're like, focus on your core, graduate. And now you've got a lot of time to focus on what to do with the younger students. And you've got more time to talk to their parents. You have more time to maybe come up with just additional ideas, because you can't let kids who are supposed to graduate falter, because they need to graduate.
Yeah.
It's very important. And if you have high school kids, you have to, that's your future. Like you can't have a class that gets owned because you decided to spend a lot of time with grade 5. You're not going to get away with that. Like, you need to be smart. You need to make sure that these kids who need the most flexibility have it. And when you do that, I think it just loosens stuff up. So I've kind of recommended this model for scheduling first. And the scheduling requires that teachers are pre-prepared. Every single week, their content is updated. And as the first year is the worst, but year 2 is not as bad. Year 3 is pretty cushy. Year 4, you revise a few of the lessons, but not all of them. And then after you do this, like 5 or 6 years, it's a much better deal for a teacher, in my opinion, because you're catering to a section of students who you don't actually have to see in the class. That gives you technically a free slot because you've replaced class time with office hours. So that's what I've thrown out for the older kids. For the younger kids, the elementary kids, I really don't know. I think there's easily a good middle ground with middle school kids. They're the most flexible.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just kind of encouraging people to think about putting systems in place that happen every single day that support learning at school and learning outside of school.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, for sure. And the whole flexibility, I've thought about that, but I've never taken it to that level.
But we've never been in this situation.
Yeah, this is true. But that's great. That's something I'm definitely going to throw
and
out.
When we were working for Jens, there was a 5-day period where they put me and 6 other people in a room every day for like 8 hours and said, develop a blending learning model. We want to see what it looks like. You guys just give us your best idea. And we hashed this stuff out for like 6 days. And after it was over, you know, there were a lot of different theories out there about how it would work. And there were a lot of motivations for making this work, because technically you can make a lot more money blending your curriculum if you're willing to overload your teachers with work. But
yeah,
the one thing that did come out of it was that if you implement blended learning, what you really do is create a lot more choice for students. And it's not for everybody, and they don't all have to do it. That's another thing. But you don't really need that many of them to do it to make sure that the content is available. I would say 15-20% buy-in max, and that's per semester if you're in a high school. And I was just thinking, you know, there are kids who compete in sports at a really high level. Wouldn't it be awesome if during their main sports season, they could do one or two classes on their own time, and during the day, they could go to physical therapy, talk to their coach, get some sleep, all the stuff that they can't do every single semester that they have a sports season. And there's some seasons that cross semesters, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Basketball.
So that means they're losing out in all kinds of opportunities for just like their health and well-being. I mean, you read about all these stories about like young athletes in America, they get horribly injured in high school and,
oh yeah,
you know, when do they actually have time to like recover and take care of themselves?
Almost never. And if you're playing a big sport in high school, you're not seeing as many students playing multiple sports in a year. Usually they're like, I'm playing football or I'm playing basketball or yeah, I'm playing baseball. And when they're not in season, then they are constantly training.
Training.
Yeah. Yep. Constantly. Yeah.
And then I was thinking about kids that were into music. Like, I used to work with kids and they wanted to go to special music schools and they had to go travel to try out. Well, when can they do that? Well, they can't. They're just going to miss class. So yeah, let's say they know.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Three of my classes.
Okay. You're back. I lost you for a second there. But you're back.
Say that they know in the spring they want to music schools. Yeah, yeah. Am I back now?
Yeah. Yeah. You're good. You're Hello? Better. Hello. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you. My point was that.
Gotta love Skype.
They know in the spring they need to do something. In the spring, they take more flexible schedules.
Yes. Yes. That's a good point. That's because they have that ability to do that then. Another thing I just want to bring up, because we're running long here, is schools. What should schools do? And right now, a lot of schools are using a lot of products that are free. But in the fall, they're not going to be free. You're going to have to you're going to have to budget to plan for it. So, for example, our school, we are on a trial on Zoom that expires in, I think, a week and a half. Which is fine because that carries us to the end of the school year. But if we have to distance learn in the fall, we have to look at what pricing options we can afford for Zoom in the fall. Because Google Hangout Meets, which is now just Google Meets, is not going to cut it. It's not, our kids are just too immature. They can't sit there and not type stupid stuff into the chat. Like butts, like you smell like a butt, you know, and then everybody starts laughing. Like that's just, you can't do that or share theirs. Anyway, they need something with a little bit more control. So, BrainPop was free. It's not free anymore. Zoom was free. It's not free anymore. Those where they had basic accounts they removed the limitation. Well, those limitations are now back.
And I think some of the other services are going to go up in price because they can't actually run them at the price they were selling them for because the demand was low. And mm-hmm. now the demand is high, so they have to pay for infrastructure. They're yep. going to pass that off to the client.
Yeah, they have to, or they're going to go out of business. Some of these places, you know, are not huge like BrainPop or Zoom. You know, one bad year could mean the end of them. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you should know that the majority of tech companies are just praying somebody buys them out because they're not profitable.
Yeah. Loom, I'm looking at you, Loom. I really like your product, but I'm looking at you because you're brand new. You're not even, I think you're like 2-3 years old, and you're giving away your service, man.
what's your prediction with Edmodo? Will they start charging?
No. I don't think Edmodo will. Edmodo, which was purchased, Tony, I don't know if you're aware of this, it was purchased by Tencent.
Oh, the Chinese company.
The Chinese giant.
Oh.
And so
they own WeChat, man.
They own a lot. They're enormous. I have no idea how huge they were. But they were purchased back in 2015, I want to say, by Tencent. And Tencent, for people out there who don't know, is enormous. I mean, it's like Microsoft. They're big. They're like Google big. They're huge. They're huge. And they just have a ton of different services, which is probably a reason why Edmodo can actually work inside of China without any VPNs.
Yeah.
It's owned by Tencent. So I can't imagine Tencent would. So what they do, where they make money, is they have app integration. So let's say you have Zoom, for example. Well, maybe you can pay them like, oh, well, we'll pay us $50 a month and we'll let you integrate Zoom into Edmodo for your school. That's where they're kind of making money. And they have other apps that you can integrate with Edmodo that they have built that are more like a premium tier kind of a thing.
Okay. So
that's how they're going to make money. And another thing, people out there, is if your teachers need document cameras, you better by God buy them this summer and early this summer, because you can't find them anywhere. They're sold out. There's this great Taiwan company that makes these great, fairly affordable document cameras, and they are sold out. Like they're like, we have none. We have zero in our warehouse. We have zero.
Because people were demanding them at home to show worksheets and stuff.
Exactly. And document cameras are really good, I think, if you've got, especially if you're a math teacher, art teacher, and you don't have to spend $700 to $1,000 on a document camera. You can find a really good one for $100, maybe even $200. But they're hard to come by right now. So
yeah, there's a company in Texas that sells a product that I love called the V2. A V2 stand.
That's right. Works with an iPad.
V2 stand works with an iPad, an iPhone, most Android devices, and it will let you mount your phone so you can use it, or your iPad. And it also has power and a light that comes up. And they're about $100, and they're a really good product. And so I highly recommend people that have other devices that just want to use them as document cameras to go for this V2 stand.
Yep,
it's a great product. It's very stable.
It's a fantastic product. I've seen it. I put the link in the show notes for people who are curious. And as far as the document camera company, I'm just going to go ahead and put it. It's IPEVO. They make great document cameras. They're really good. They're ugly. I'm just going to put that out there. But they make really good cameras. I mean, it's HD quality. They have lights. They're not huge, so they're fairly portable. And it's very good. It's just a really good. It's a really good product. I think it's worth every penny. If that's something that interests you. So, and very flexible. You can get as close to a document or as far away to a document, or even if you want to show a whiteboard and record, you know, this is the software that comes with it is pretty easy. Anyway, there it is. But Tony, we're almost at an hour. Oh man.
Yeah. It's been a long talk.
It has been. Well, I'm just going to wrap things up for IT Babble. I'm Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next podcast. So keep on babbling out there. And stay safe, people.